No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. And today I'm in here with the beloved, respected, phenomenal, ridiculously talented Rhapsody.
Oh, what an intro.
That might have been the most flattering intro I've ever done. I don't know what just possessed me to do that.
I love you too, man.
Hey, appreciate that. So how you doing?
I'm good. I'm tired, but I'm good. But well, I'm thankful.
What have you been doing?
Because you waited for me.
Oh, I guess we are. We're waiting an hour and a half. I didn't even notice. I was playing Tetris in there and listening to your music on blast, as your assistant here can attest.
I'm good. You know, I'm doing those album promo runs.
Mm.
You know, I just left doing voiceovers.
Voiceovers for what?
A food delivery service.
Really?
That's the best I could say.
And wait, so is this what it is to be a poppin' artist these days, is that you just have like a Postmates brand deal collab? So it's like, I'm Rhapsody, and you should order a Big Mac and get my album with it or something. Is it a bundle?
Is it a bundle?
Yeah, like you order Postmates and you just get a Rhapsody CD.
And then you go
platinum just because you did it with a million Postmates orders?
That's an idea. See how you did that?
Well, there's somebody out there that's like honestly thought about that.
Yo, but it matters who does it first.
Mm.
That's the bar.
Well, DJ Khaled did it with energy drinks. We're going to do it with fast food.
Straight like that, because everybody loves Postmates, DoorDash. What else?
Do you have a bundle deal with your album? Is this something you even thought about? It's a merch thing, probably?
Yeah. Mm. It is. I got fly jackets, vinyl, t-shirts, stickers, pins.
There you go.
Yep.
Well, did you think... Is that in any way unsettling to have to take part in such strange music industry traditions that we now have?
I actually enjoy the bundles. It allows you to get creative, you know, and think of album sales outside of traditional, because nobody's going to the record stores no more. So, you know, just like, yo, what can I think of outside of the box? If somebody, like, I'm gonna just put my name on some boxers, you know, and put them in a bundle.
No, I totally respect it, because I feel like if you do it the right way, it could be a really fun, creative, not gross expression of your brand. And then when it's like, you know, like a Walmart thing or something, then it's just kind of, sometimes it ends up just feeling kind of yucky.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm with it, you know. That's right. Just me, though.
It's crazy, because the only people who sell CDs at this point are like the people who are able to just somehow appeal to that tiny percentage of the country who still buys CDs.
That go to Target.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that's not me.
No.
Everybody.
You've got nuanced customers that know what they're doing.
No, they not buying no CD. Vinyl, no, though.
Yeah. The vinyl probably moves,
on that,
huh?
Yeah.
Really?
Label was like, yo, you did great on vinyl last album.
Really?
It was Annie Up.
Well, yeah. This was the year that vinyl first outsold CDs since the 70s, or since like CDs came out, I guess in the 80s.
Oh, this year? See, I was thinking it was 3 years ago.
Well, it's been going up like crazy, but I guess this is the first year actually fully passed it.
Oh, so we right on time.
Yeah.
And it helps when you make great music, because that's like a collector's edition.
That's a fact.
I want somebody to open my vinyl 30 years from here and hear the dust on it.
And some music, you can't even get a physical version now, though.
No.
Which is kind of troubling. I've thought about becoming a record guy, having a record collection.
You should.
It's a thing. Because I have no physical connection with the music that I love, you know? And I find that kind of disturbing, to think that, you know, there might be a mixtape that I listen to 30 times on my fucking in my car. I love it. I have such a close relationship with it for that period of time. But then when I'm done with it and I move on to the next album that I'm listening to, there's nothing that remains. It's like, I don't, like, back, that I would have that exact same experience with CDs when I was a kid. But then that CD's sitting on the shelf, and you see that CD once in a while, and you get that mental reminder, like, that really meant something to me. And a lot of kids who listen to music, and myself, have kind of fallen into this, is you just have nothing physical that connects you to it.
Exactly. You have nothing tangible to touch. It's like photos. Like, I like to go home and go through photo albums.
Mm.
But it's not the same, like, to pick up a picture and be like, dang, versus looking at it, let me go to March.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go to places and see where I was. Like,
exactly.
It's just different to be able to touch it and have it a memory.
Yeah. For me, it's like, I want that. I'm like craving that. Mm-hmm. And in general, it's weird too, because now everybody makes merch. So like, merch can't be the solution
to physicals,
to like creating that connection, because I feel like the merch thing has just become so sort of blown out. I know merch is like super important to artists and everything, but sometimes it just seems like that has gotten taken to this absurd level.
Yes, it's normalized out. I think we're all going to go analog soon. There's
really
going to be a generation that rebels because everybody's going to be digital. It's going to be like, I don't want to do what y'all are doing. So we're going to go back to answering phones on dial tones and having answering machines and Walkmans. Like, I really think that's the next move. And I think Kanye is kind of ahead of that by doing like these Sunday services that are just out in the field and making it an experience. I feel like that's like the wave.
It's like we've reached the limits of technology and its ability to connect us. I feel like to a certain extent as a society, we're sort of done with being just mystified with technology and thinking, oh, this is so great and we're going to just use this and this is going to replace everything in our lives. It feels like a lot of people, whether they've really tangibly said it in their head or not, they've sort of come to that realization that it's like gatherings are really important. Being around people is really important.
Exactly.
Like, you know, even the FaceTime call versus the text is really important, you know?
Yes. People want to see you and really have a connection now. Like, I found myself even talking more on the phone, like back in the day. Because it's crazy. Like, a lot of people in the day, they don't even know how to hold conversations.
Right.
Like, they'll hit you be like, yo, what's your IG? I'm just going to DM you from across the room.
I find that weird when someone asks for your Instagram instead of your phone number. Because it's like, oh, so you want a way to contact me where you can also keep an eye on the score that has been attributed to my existence of how important I am. Gotcha.
Exactly.
That's what they mean, you know?
Basically.
All the most insecure guys I know are the ones who give the girl their Instagram immediately.
Yo, that says something. Let me show you my fake life.
Check out my 30K. That's good.
Right. My 30K in this picture with my glamour glow that makes my pecs look a little bigger than they are.
That's real. Talk to me about your early rap fandom, because it just feels like when you listen to you, like you must have been such a rabid hip hop fan and like you probably had like a ridiculously intense love affair with it from early on.
I did. I fell in love with it, watching so many, but MC Light was definitely one. Let me tell you, that Method Man All I Need video.
Wow.
Well, that took me over the top.
Like, really? Okay.
Yeah, like that's when, like the stories of it and how cool he was and he had on the Grand Hill Felas.
So you kind of knew about that before you knew about like Wu-Tang itself? That was like an entry point?
No, I knew about Wu, but it was particularly that song and Method Man that really just like, yo, because he was fine, too.
Oh, yeah.
And Mary J. It was just something that was super cool about that particular video.
Isn't it funny that they have Dave East on the Wu-Tang show playing Method Man? Because he's like the stereotypical good-looking rapper guy.
Exactly. When I saw the cast and I was like, Dave East. That makes sense.
Right.
Because Method Man was and still is the sex symbol.
I showed my girlfriend Dave East and she was just silent. And I just look at her and I go, you can say it's hot.
Right.
Like you're so
She's
transparent.
Like,
I know that's what you're thinking.
Say anything.
I'm like, I don't care. You can just say that that's what you're thinking is that, oh, he's a good looking guy.
Did she say it?
Yeah. And I just thought it was goofy as fuck that she thought I would like, care. But I guess I understand. Because if it was like my homie, then I maybe wouldn't want to hear it.
No, not the homie.
If your bro is hot, it's like, I don't really know if I want to hear my girlfriend.
Oh,
like,
true,
remind me.
That's too close to home.
If she's got a super hot friend, I'm probably not going to mention it.
No, you don't do that.
You know, maybe in a context where it's relevant. It's not relevant all that time,
that often. Exactly, because if she ever comes around, she's going to be looking at you if you're looking at her, and it's always going to be a thing.
We're so open, though. She knows I don't want anything. She knows I don't have any mental space for, like, actually liking other girls.
See, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think she's that worried about it. Okay, wait, yeah, so MC Light, Method Man, anything else in particular that stands out that helped form your pedigree?
Illmatic. I ran it at AZ, Sugar Hill, Queen Latifah, Fugees, Crisscross.
Really?
You know,
that was huge for me in second grade.
I definitely wore my pants backwards.
Oh, yeah, I tried that
completely.
One, too. I'm pretty sure my parents just reprimanded me.
Yo, yeah. Those were early. Like, where I was from, we didn't have, like, a bunch of mom-and-pop stores you can go get music. So I didn't necessarily listen to a bunch of albums. Everything I saw was a single. Like, remember when you get singles for a dollar? That's what I would get, or I was watching videos. So if it wasn't, you know, if they didn't have a video for it, if it wasn't a big single on the radio, a lot of times I missed a lot of that early hip-hop, and I had to catch up.
Right.
So that's probably another reason why All I Need really resonated me versus a whole Wu-Tang album.
Right.
Because I didn't listen to 36 Chambers till I was probably a senior in high school.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that was what it was to be a rap fan at that time. You go to the CD store. For me, I would go to the CD store, and it's like you're gambling, because it's like you know that you like, you know, I like bought like multiple like Ice Cube CDs that ended up being like not an Ice Cube CD you wanted, like some weird bootleg or like compilation thing, like, and you know, and then you just get the right one. But I had no way to figure out which was the right Ice Cube CD to buy.
You took a chance.
Yeah,
and it's just like, man, I loved, you know, this DMX, but that third album, I was like, dang, this one ain't really hitting for me. But yeah, you always had to take a chance. But a lot of times, you came out on the better end, and I say you would today.
Because you were exploring, and it was very much a system that rewarded people that were explorative and that were down to try new things. Whereas like now to be a rap fan, when I think about it, it's such a strange thing where they have these perfectly curated playlists that are just like, this is the kind of person you are, this is what you need. And it's just so manufactured, and it's such a strange way, and kids will never know how strange it is.
No, and they don't know who they are, what they even like, because they wait for somebody to tell them, this is what you like.
Mm.
This is your playlist. This is, like, you got to figure out what you like for yourself and who you are and what you want in your own playlist. But they can't even really do that nowadays, and that's a trip.
Yeah, because it's like, to a certain extent, these people know, and we kind of know, that the playlists, they're the product of artificial intelligence, basically. So they're actually better at predicting what you might like than what you currently know that you like.
Right.
Which is scary.
Yes.
Like, they're better at knowing what I want than what I know that I want.
Not me, though.
No. You don't buy it?
No.
I tremendously respect people who have eclectic tastes, especially in this age. Like, people who, like, will throw on some dope shit from the 70s.
Straight. That's not just random. Like, this I wake up, this is how I feel today. Like, I'll go to the playlist because sometimes it's just like, I don't know what I'm going to listen to today. Mm. So let me see what they got. And I'm just like, I like this song, but all of these are not. Like, I can't. I never find a playlist where it's just like, I could let this rock ever. Mm. So I am the anomaly in that.
But it's funny because, like, you're also an artist who's signed to a label. So you know that that's totally part of being an artist, is that they're strategically working these connections to get you on all these playlists.
Completely.
Like, if you land on Rap Caviar, it's like you just fucking hit the lottery.
Yes, because when I landed on it, I was like, thank you, Jesus.
Mm.
Rap life. Mm-hmm.
That check, it's like the Spotify lottery.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't received one of those yet. This is my first year actually making it to that part of the game. So
that's dope.
We'll see.
That's exciting.
I just know that it's a thing and people really look for it and they listen to it.
Mm. So,
exposure.
I've listened to it a few times. I don't like, it sort of feels like it's just part of like the new, what it is to be a new rap fan. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little bit disconnected from it.
I get it, because we cut from the same area, kind of.
We are kind of the same age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's cool. It's like our high school reunion. So specifically in North Carolina, though, was there any sort of like local rap scene that you were a part of? When did you tap in with it? I'm sure there was, but it probably took a little while for you to discover it.
It wasn't until I got to college. I went to NC State.
Mm.
And, you know, where I'm from is a small country town. The rap scene was the back of the bus, you know, or you might go to somebody's crib and they just freestyling while they roll up blunts. That was probably the extent of the rap scene where I grew up. So I went to college at NC State, and I was working at Foot Action, and I met who became my best friend, a guy named Charlie Smarts.
Mm-hmm.
And he introduced me to the Raleigh rap scene. Like, he would take me to beat battles. He was in a band, so I started going to shows, and it's like I'm really finding my way, like, you know, learning who the Justice League is. At this time, I didn't even know who Lil Brother and Ninth Wonder were. So he introduced me to all of that, and that's how I kind of got in it. Like, I went to a lot of shows, and though I knew I always wanted to do it, you know, I had examples of, you know, this is how it feels, and this is where you start at, like, in a small place, but you feel the energy. He took me to my first studio. You know, he's the one that told me, like, to get on the mic for the first time. So I'm experiencing all of these things probably my sophomore on up in college.
And that's invaluable stuff, because a lot of people who really want to make it in the rap world, they're just so fucking clueless because they don't have any actual, like, real-life interaction with it. And that's kind of the main best thing you could get.
Yeah, no, you gotta be of the culture and start there. Like, we started a hip hop organization on campus, and we would go back to the grassroots. Like every Friday, we would have a cipher. You know, Friday night, or we rent out the event center in the bottom of the dorm, and we had rap battles. And I was always the host. Like, it felt like 8 Mile, but on campus. Like the energy, like, and learning, like, this is really what the culture is, and how it's supposed to be in free expression and rhyme. Like, that's where I started.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing. Do you feel like when you look back on it, did you take it for granted? Because to have like a truly vibrant scene like that is a rare thing. To have mm-hmm. that many young people just all around each other are that excited about music.
Yeah. What was the question?
Do you feel, were you aware of how special that was at that time? Because sometimes when you start working in the world and stuff, you start to kind of lose your zeal for that excitement.
Yeah, I knew it was special for me because I didn't have it before.
Right, yeah.
Like, you know, if you lived in the city or like a New York or a bigger metropolitan area, for us, like a Raleigh or Charlotte, LA, like, you get to experience those things a lot. You get to go to shows and see artists. Like, there's culture everywhere. There was none of that existed how I grew up. So when I got to college, I did appreciate it because I wanted it so much, but I only got to see it through TV. I only got to see it through movies. You know, so to actually be in it, to be hosting and be a part of it, like, I appreciated it like no other. Wow. So it was different for me in that way, versus somebody like, it's just a part of their everyday life. You
some
know
people
saying?
Who grow up in Harlem and shit,
yeah,
and like, they just are like so used to seeing shit, like, and
bro,
it's just,
that's what
it's
I mean.
Not like, as challenging, I guess, yeah. Or even in LA, you can walk by the Supreme store, you like see rappers all day and shit.
And it's just part of the everyday life.
Yeah.
Versus if that was my, like, people would go crazy. They would go nuts. Like, even to go to New York and be like, dang, that's Sedgwick Ave. And people that live around there, they're like, it's Sedgwick Ave. I walk past this every day where hip-hop started. You know, so it's just different.
Right.
It's a different appreciation.
I think that with the people in L.A. when it comes to the weather so much, I'm like, man, you people have no fucking clue how nice this is compared to the shitty-ass weather I grew up in.
Where'd you grow up?
Like, right outside Boston.
Ooh, bro.
New Hampshire. It's kind of legendary for snow.
It's definitely cold.
I really did not like cold.
I went there like a week ago. I was like, we got to go back.
Really?
It's fall for real over here.
Oh, yeah. The leaves. People come from all over the country and go, look at the leaves where I grew up. And that's a perfect example. I don't like, look, what do you want? Look at the leaves?
Because they don't know nothing about the leaves changing color.
Fucking leaves have always, they look the same. Like, they've always been doing that my whole life. I never really thought about it. But yeah, I guess they are kind of beautiful.
Oh, yeah. See, I noticed that, too. I live in North Carolina, and it changes like that all the time.
Mm. So yeah. When you start rapping, how quickly did you take to it? Were you tight at first?
Look, so I was tight lyrically with words, but my cadence was off. My cadence was off. My voice was off. It was super high pitch, like dumb high pitch. Let me see my inflections, like. My joint was probably like real monotone. Mm. Like I did not sound confident at all. But I was lyrical. I've always been lyrical. So that's been since day one. I started out doing poetry, maybe like my 10th grade year of high school. Always read a lot, read books. So just the power to play with words and be creative. I was a artsy kid.
I was wondering if you had a poetry background, because my girlfriend makes me go to the poetry lounges sometimes, and I was definitely thinking that.
Makes me.
Yeah, you know. Once I get there, it's not a makes me thing, but she has to like put it in my calendar and make sure that I'm going to be there.
Yeah, no, that was a thing for me. So I knew I wanted to rap early, and I tried it like 11 or 12. Like, I tried. I'm going to test it out on my brother.
Uh-huh.
You know, we was cleaning up one Saturday morning. I pulled a vacuum hose out, and I tried to freestyle. He was like, yo, you freaking suck.
Wow.
So I was like, all right, I'm going to just write poetry. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to do that no more.
Uh-huh.
That happened, and we had, like, a pep rally at our high school, and I've been practicing my freestyle that I wrote all day. And when I got the mic, I froze, you know.
Wow, really?
And so, yeah. So I was like, I'm just going to get into this poetry thing.
Whenever I'm at the poetry lounge, I'm always thinking about the poets as rappers. I'm like sitting there being this like vulture-ass A&R, just thinking like, could he be a rapper? Because it's such a different thing.
Man, it's so different. Mm. Like, even battle rap, rapping, and spoken word poetry are all different things. Like, you got to have different skill sets. Like, trying to take somebody in the poetry world and put them in the rap world, they try to rap, but in a poetic way, and it's your delivery is just completely different.
Have you ever seen it work, or is there anyone that I'm not thinking of who stands out as people that, like, came from the poetry scene and then became really popular as rappers, or is it usually kind of separate?
Not that I know of. Like, the only one I could think of is probably, like, Mos Def.
True.
But I don't even know if he started with poetry first.
He just seems like he would.
Because he hosted like the show.
Seems like he wrote some poetry. Yeah.
The Poetry Champ. Like,
yeah.
Maybe, but nah. I always see rappers being able to do poetry and spoken word. But but I mean, I guess so. Like, I started out in poetry first.
You seem too nice to be a battle rapper.
I am.
Was that actually why it didn't work? Did you ever try that?
Would I ever try?
Or did you ever try? I just feel like that is just such, it's the most testosterone-fueled, aggressive shit on earth.
Yeah, I'm way too nice. You gotta, like, there ain't no rules in that. You can't worry about hurting nobody's feelings. And I'd be like, man, I'd be trying. I probably could write a great battle rap for somebody else. Mm. It's something I never said. I'd be like, dang, that might be too hard.
I saw a battle where a girl pulled out a photo of the other girl's bed. And it was just like the nastiest bed. She's like, "This is your bed," and it was like, and everyone in the crowd was, "Oh!" And everyone just went with it, and I was just like, "Man, that's crazy." Because if that's not her bed, and it's just a picture of a random bed, and everyone just believed it, because why the fuck would you have a photo of a random ass person's bed? I'm like, that is genius.
Yo, straight up. Because once you got him, man.
Yeah.
I could probably battle rap today, though. My confidence is a little different.
Or if somebody dissed you, like, really good, that you now just that, wanted to wash them.
I practice those in my head every day.
Really?
Yes. When I'm driving, when I'm in the shower, I battle people in my head.
Oh, my God. It would be just such a gift. Sharp. If somebody whacked dissed you, it would be just the biggest gift. Not even whacked, just somebody in general.
Yes. I mean, it'd be fun. You know, it would be something I would like to, you know, partake in.
Yeah.
It's a sport.
It's weird that we live in this world, though, where nobody really talks shit on each other because everybody wants to keep the peace because they know that someone will write a song about them. They'll be on TMZ
and they ain't
day.
Ready for the battle.
Yeah.
You got to really be cut from the cloth and secure. Mm. Everybody ain't really secure.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to, like, really doing it.
Because that exposes all your deepest, darkest shit. They're going to pull up everything you ever, like, you know, it's just, I just think about how it's just a war of just egos.
Yes.
Up there on stage and just trying to just smash the other person. Like, the best, most devastating battles are the ones where the dude's actually, like, crying or, like, ashamed, like, hanging his head and shit. Like, that's what you want to see. It's a brutal art form.
Yes, that, or it's just like they go blank. That's when you know you got them. But
you didn't get too deep in that, though.
Nah, not at all.
So how do you, like, fast forward to meeting Ninth Wonder and him actually taking you seriously enough that he wanted to work with you on that level? Is there, like, how far do we have to go to get to that point? Because that's incredible.
Let me see. Okay, I get to college in, I ain't gonna say what year, but I met Ninth the summer of 2005 for the first time.
Okay.
And
he's just, like, the local god at that point? Because he's got to be, like, the biggest name in that scene, right?
No, he is the local god. Like, because at this time, he's coming off a Black album. Mary J. Blige.
Probably nobody
Destiny
in North
Child.
Carolina had anyone talking as much as he did at that
no,
time.
No, he was the god. J. Cole hadn't popped yet, so it was Ninth. Like, he was the biggest thing in hip hop to come from there. So I meet him in 2005, you know, randomly. At this time, the summer before is when I write and record my first two songs ever. Like, I'm writing poetry at the time, like, maybe some verses here, but to write a full song and record it, like, I probably did it 2 months before I met him. And okay. He hears these two songs, which I'm like, it ain't nothing that's probably going to impress him. You know, I'm happy with it, but, you know, he listens to it and he runs it back maybe like 5 to 7 times.
Really?
And I'm thinking, like, he's probably going to nitpick it and tell me, like, you need to do this and that. He looks up and he says, "That's your star." And it's a room full of guys, like, you know, all my friends that are in the hip hop organization. Charlie Smarts is there. And he says, "This is your star."
Wow.
Yeah. And after that, you know, he gives me homework. That's what he does. He gives me homework to work on my flow. Because again, like, I'm lyrical, but the flow needs some work. Inflection needs some work. So he tells me, listen to boop, 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 these albums, and listen to how they're saying it, not necessarily what they're saying. So I did that. I probably did that for like 3 months consistently. Like, it was at a point where I could get in the shower and rap the very first word to the very first song of the Black Album to the very last one.
Wow.
I would do that all the way through. And, you know, he keeps in touch, you know, just to check in on us. Let's just come to the studio, watch Little Brother record sometimes. And, you know, he just continues to take me under his wing, give me lessons, you know. Then he goes to Central. He gets his own studio. So we start hanging out there. And I get a manager, and he's like, well, what are your short-term and long-term goals? And I'm like, well, I hear Knife is starting a label. Like, you know, I love to be a part of it.
So you had been a little too scared to mention that to him directly beforehand? You just ended up saying it to the manager?
I just never thought about it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I think I'm so focused on working on the music and the homework. And, you know, he just presented the question, like, what are your goals? And I'm just like, well, Dad, let me think about it. I mean, I've been working with Knife. I heard he's starting a label. I'd love to be a part of it. So we have a meeting, and Knife is like, yeah, I'd love to have you. And this was 2009, and he officially announced the label sometime later that year.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And was it a scenario where you were sort of like rushing to get stuff out, or was it a scenario where you wanted to like be incubated for a long time and just really try to build up your skill set before you revealed yourself to the world?
I think it was more so I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to start. So for him just to give me homework, like, that was enough for me to focus on, to figure it out. Like, I knew I wanted to do a project. You know, I wanted to put something out, but I wanted to do it right. So I didn't know how to start. So whatever he told me to do, I did it. It didn't matter what it was. You know, I'd come in and do songs. He'd be like, write it over. I'll write it over. And I probably was developing in the beginning before I was allowed, not allowed, but able to even put out my first project for 2 years. You know, I probably did 300 or 400 songs. None of them will see the light of day, but it was all just development.
But you saw the value in that. Was that in any way frustrating? Because a lot of rappers get into that position. They got to work on their craft for 2 years, and it drives them insane.
No, not for me, because
you knew you
I didn't have
better.
An ego. Yeah, and I knew I wasn't as good as everybody else.
Right.
So I wasn't in no rush. Like, I didn't feel like it was even time for me yet. There were so many people that were in and out of that studio, and they were so dope. And I was just like, man. So the frustrating part of me was with myself. Like, dang, why can't I ever consistently learn about cadence and keep it? Like, why am I always just going off of the cadence? You know, why can't I learn to write good hooks? Why are my hooks sucking? You know, so it was more frustration with me of just wanting to be better. I necessarily wasn't worried about, like, oh, I need to get this project out. Why is this taking so long? My frustration, like, I got to get these things Knife told me to mark off the checklist to master to be a great MC. I got to get this right. So that was the thing I was focusing on.
I feel like you're, like, the last generation that might have grown up with that sort of mind state.
Yeah.
I don't hear anything like that from a lot of the young artists I talk to.
Man, I don't know. I play sports too, so that might have had something to do with it. Mm. Like, you know, I think that.
What do you play?
I play basketball, so I learned a lot of things I learned through basketball I was able to apply to music, like about work ethic. I was always the first to practice, last to leave. I was team captain, you know. So the same thing with the studio. If Knife got there at 4, I would get there at 4. But if he stayed till 5 in the morning, I'm staying till 8 in the morning. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, whatever he did, I had to do more of.
Right.
You know, how are you, Knife Wonder, who's working, got a Grammy nomination, work with Jay, marry all these people. And if you working this much, and I know I need to work 10 times harder than that. So that was, like, my thing. And that I knew that in order to get better, I had to practice. Mm. It's like shooting free throws.
Right.
So that was always my mind state.
That's just crazy, because I feel like that is how I try. That's what I want to try to explain to, like, young artists when I'm talking to them, is, like, my advice for you is don't make 3 songs and put them on SoundCloud and then just start pushing them and acting like you're a real rapper right now. It's like, you should make right. 30 songs, and you should be able to look at the first one and then look at the last one and see serious demonstrable results. I hate that that's how you're supposed to say that word. It's supposed, to me, it seems like it should be demonstrable, but whatever. you should be able to see the progress, and you should be going out and you should be meeting people, not necessarily with the intention of just promoting your stuff, but you, yeah. should be linking with producers and engineers, or like the types of people who can really guide your sound and like really like make you have something that will be better, you know, and mm-hmm. even just learning to actually rap, like the physical act of rapping is something that you're just, you're not going to be in peak form on your first song.
There's no way, bro.
And that's why it's frustrating that some people do have big hits off their first song. But that is a freak accident.
And we see
hard to explain.
That be the only thing they have.
Quite often.
So
yeah.
It's just like, if that's what you want, you better get it. And hope you got a plan to do something, because it's not going to last long. Mm. But, you know, yeah, that's exactly it. Like, when people ask me for advice, those are always the things that I tell them. Like, you got to be patient with yourself. You got to be honest with your music. You have to celebrate every win. Like Knife always told me, if you put out a song and today it gets 5 and tomorrow it might have 10 plays, and that's a win because people are listening to your music. If you put out and it, you get 5 songs one day and 3 the next, then you got to be like, something ain't right. I got to get back. So you celebrate the wins. You put in your 10,000 hours. You build relationships, because they matter sometimes more than the music, like the relationships you build. Those are going to be the people that you call up, or people that see you and are going to support you, that are going to be, you know, CEOs of labels one day, or going to be at Spotify curating playlists, and you build a relationship with them. They follow your career, and now you're at the time, they at the time of your artistry where it's like, yo, you could be on this joint. I've known you. I've watched your grind. I like you as a person, so I'm going to look out for you. Like, all of those things are important. And, too, like, I was with Reason last night, and we was talking about, you know, just albums and sequencing. And, you know, we started on a conversation of people don't even, like, a lot of artists today don't even work with producers to executive produce their projects. Mm. Like, you get albums, and they have good songs, but the sequencing is so out of whack that it's just, like, it throws the album off. So it's just so much that goes into making music, and a lot of times just humbling yourself and not having an ego and allowing people to help you and right. help yourself. Like,
it's interesting because you came out at sort of like a weird time where the music industry was in a real state of flux,
yeah,
where the albums were over, albums weren't really selling the way that they used to. There was like the mixtape scene was kind of doing something for a period of time, mm-hmm. and then there was this sort of like weird time period where everybody's just listening to MP3s on blogs and stuff, and people haven't fully like adjusted over to
streaming,
and now that landscape is super solidified and it's like very like commonly understood thing. Has that been odd for you to sort of navigate, because you came into the music game at a time when there was like very little of a established blueprint for how you're going to be a successful rapper?
Yeah, like I remember being in it, We Are the Middle Children, and just trying to figure out, like, yo, how is anybody gonna eat? Because it was a time where, like, nobody's buying CDs anymore, but everything is, you know, pretty much for free. Mm. SoundCloud is MP3, so unless you're like a crazy pop artist, that's when everybody was doing 360 deals too, you know. So
that's when that was invented.
Yeah, that was a big thing. So for me, it was just like, okay, I got a tour and I got to figure out a way to sell merch and, you know, to make money. But if anything, like, I just need my music to go crazy from somewhere. Like, it was all about YouTube views at that time and getting signed. So it was just hard to figure out. Like, I don't really even know where this is going, let alone where I fit in it, because the sound of music, like, there was really no space for lyrical artists, you know, on that big of a side. Like, at this time, it's kind of like Black Hippie just kind of popping. J. Cole mixtapes are doing good, but, you know, it still hasn't, it's not at the forefront of the sound. So it was just a really, like, feeling through the dark black time, like, man, I don't know what we're going to do. And, you know, even with streaming, you could stream stuff, but they really didn't know how to monetize it at that time, too. So, you know, just trying to figure it out. But, you know, you got to have blind faith at this point that it's just going, you just got to stick with it and keep going and just see how it grows. Like, I don't know.
Definitely. Was, as a fan, was it crazy watching J. Cole's rise and see him get as big as he's gotten, just as a North Carolina person?
It was inspiring, you know, and to know, like you say, like, he did it off the mixtape scenes. Like,
right.
He's probably the last one to really do it off mixtapes like that. And, like, for real mixtapes where, you know, when I did mixtape, they were all, like, Beats of Mine that producers made, like they were pretty much albums almost. Mm-hmm. But he used to still do industry beats and rap over those. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And it was just dope to see him do that and to sign with Jay-Z and Rockefeller, to be from North Carolina and do that. Like, it was inspiring. It was super inspiring. Like,
yeah. That was so wild. Well, you know, the first time I think I ever became aware of you was when you did that video with Mac Miller.
I tell people, like, a lot of the foundation of my fan base on Mac Miller fans.
Really?
Yeah, like, my career, it would not have been the same without him.
So
like,
that was a big moment. How did you even get connected to him?
He drove down with, you know, the Most Dope Crew, Jimmy, Tree J, Q.
And this is super early before he's really big?
Yeah, I mean, at the time, he's like, starting his bubble. Like, at this time, his videos are getting millions of plays, and
right.
he's probably doing shows at this time between 500 and 1,000 people.
And Mac is a crazy example of somebody who came up off mixtapes and even got sued for, he was like, yeah. that dude who got sued for
back,
rapping
right?
over somebody's beat. Yeah.
That's crazy. Like, this helped monetize your career, so we're going to figure out a way to get it. Like,
and every rap that? Fan is just like, whoa, like, they can do that? What the
like,
fuck?
We've been doing this forever. Yeah. Like, what are you talking about?
It seems, everything seems so simple up until this moment where we realize you can get sued for that.
Yeah, but you know, the music business is hurting. They trying to figure out anyway at this point to get mm-hmm. money to figure it out. So but yeah, they drove down to North Carolina in a station wagon. Like, Mac's a big fan of Knife's. I think Crisis had reached out, so they came to work, and that's how I met him, because I was a studio rat, always in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
If I wasn't recording, I was still in there. If we had a guest, I was watching, I was learning, I was asking questions. So he came and I was just in there. And you know, you knew Mac, of course.
I didn't know him personally, but he had like been around my store and stuff like mm-hmm. in the weeks or months before he passed, which is like really like a huge bummer that like a bunch mm-hmm. of my friends got to meet him this one night that I wasn't there. But yeah, I was always a fan and everything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what you saw was you get like super lovable, love people, love good energy. It was all about having fun. So it was just easy to connect with him. And he was a big fan of the culture. So I was working on my first mixtape, Return of the Beat Girl. And he listened to it and he liked it, you know. He did a song with me and he left. And 2 weeks later, he called Knife. He was like, yo, I like Rhapsody. I want to bring her on tour.
Wow.
Like, straight like that. Like, if he liked you, he liked you. If he thought you was dope, he was going to give you a chance. And I know I'm not the only one that has a story like that. He's taken so many artists, you know, that were at the beginning of their career like me and just gave them a platform or shared his platform with them to put them on. So, you know, doing a song with me, taking me on tour, doing a video with me at the time, like his videos, again, and get millions of views, you know, that's how I got a large portion of my fan base through him, because wow. anything he was on, people were going to listen to.
Uh-huh.
It didn't matter what it was.
So that helped you really get in the door.
Definitely.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Damn. So, I mean, it's kind of fast forward ahead in your whole thing, but did you guys stay in touch and like up through his life, and what was your relationship with him when he passed?
Yeah. It wasn't like we talked every day, but you know, he would come back to North Carolina a lot. So I'd always see him then, or, you know, either we would DM each other or, you know, I'd hit him every now and again, like, what's up? How you doing? Just checking in. It wasn't like we could go 6 months without talking sometimes. And he still come to North Carolina. You pick up where you left off. Like, he come to the studio. He always bring a bunch of girls, you know, but, you know,
he's one of those dudes that when he passed, there's like a million girls writing Instagram posts about it.
Oh, man.
You know,
but it was crazy when he came to the studio. He was really about the music. Like, all the guys with him would be with the girls, but he would always be in the studio working.
Mm.
Like, never a part of that. So, but he just liked to have good people and fun around him, energy around him. So before when he passed, I think the last time I remember talking to him, I had just missed him. It was the Smokers Club Festival.
Right.
And I was in the trailer doing an interview, and Knife had went to see, I can't remember who was performing at the time, but Mac was out there. And I hate that I missed him, because, you know, Mac asked about you, and I told me. I was like, dang. But before that, the last time I remember was Complexion. I did Complexion, and he hit me. He was like, yo, that verse is crazy. Like, it's ill that you on the album. Like, that's the last time I remember, like, us having a conversation.
Wow. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever get to a point in your life where you were partying too hard or anything like that? Because I feel like when I think about the Mac Miller situation, it makes me feel like I feel like that about plenty of my friends. I feel like they party too hard, and I'm not being the loyal, attentive friend that I could potentially be. You know, everybody's so busy, but it's like sometimes you see people who maybe it feels like I should reach out more often.
Yeah.
You know?
We definitely reached out to him. Like, we knew he was struggling with some things. And it's tough, like, to be that young and be that successful that fast where, you know, you get all this money and you have anything at your disposal. Mm. And you move to L.A., you know, with your homies, like.
And all of a sudden you're dating Ariana Grande. Yeah. And then she makes an album about you, right? And shit.
Like, life moves so fast, you know, and you still so young and still trying to figure it out. You always don't know how to handle it all when it comes that fast to you. So, you know, I get it. Like, he's human. I can remember ninth, you know, having a conversation. You know, he was open about his struggles too. So it's crazy. But it was at a time where, you know, you thought he was doing better, or, you know, like, this is Mac, but it, I don't know, like, you see it, but what can you do? Like, what